The sun was reflected in the walls of the houses in multicolored splendor. I mumbled to myself, "That's the way it must look in heaven. Maybe I was really in heaven and the people here were former earth dwellers who ascended to these heights many centuries ago." You could already see flying machines in the air and people on the street. I looked at them from above. Nobody seemed to be in a hurry. Where did these people go? They had to possess everything one could wish for on Earth. I compared them to Earthlings. We also have to walk around, but we should not take risks, not lie, do not intrigue, and create disunity. If we were in agreement, we could all enjoy the beautiful things that God has prepared for us. How much that is good and beautiful in the world that God has created for us. But we must not believe that God takes all the avaricious sinners by the hand, leads them and says to them, "Look, all this is for you, take it and go." No, that will never happen because he has given people understanding. If we are wise, we need only access to the things that belongs only to oneself, so we must come to mutual understanding and peace, without which there is no progress. We are all God's creatures. So I was still standing there, rejoicing at the sight of the city and thinking, when I heard a slight noise behind me. I turned and saw Acock standing behind me. 9. The government informs and decides. "Good morning," he said. "Did you sleep well?" "Yes, thank you. Only I could not sleep for a long time." "Why? Was the bed maybe not to your liking?" "Yes, on the contrary, it was wonderful." "Yes. What was to blame for your sleeplessness?" "He well knew what was behind it. Now put yourself in my position. If you were on Earth, far from home, away from your whole world. My family may have heard of my disappearance and are worrying about me." "Yes, I understand. God willing, today we will decide on your situation and bring you back to Earth as soon as possible." I took a deep breath and said, "God grant it. We want to go in. It's almost time for the first meal. Then we both go to—" Acock said the name of the government building I did not understand. Later, he explained to me what the building is called, in which the sun's son and his counselors meet. We went in and sat down. The meal was not ready. I asked, "What time is it?" He looked at the clock and said, 1/10 of the first hour of the day." I was always grateful when he told me the time, and thought, when it's lunch time, there'll be another 4.5 hours, in another 3 hours, night falls. For this calculation I took the position of the sun as a basis. At that moment Acock's wife entered the room with breakfast and set it down on the table. She came up to us and greeted me, as always, smiling. I gave her a friendly nod. We could not talk to each other. I saw her move her lips to say something, but she could not speak German like Acock. She set the table and went out again with her son, who had followed her and politely welcomed me. Acock and I sat down at the table. I no longer speak of the prayers. There was no meal without prior prayer. The breakfast was little different from the other meals. There was a dark tea. The bread was sweetened and tasted better than the day before. After breakfast we made our way to the Son of the Sun. For this visit I had to put on my earth clothes before. Acock said that one had to recognize me as a citizen of the earth at this meeting. And so I stood there, dressed like a simple worker. I was glad that I was wearing my own clothes again. It made me feel better. Again I had my black-brown shoes, blue cotton socks, my pants, the plaid wool shirt and my brown jacket. But I did not have a hat because I never wear one. When I finished dressing, we went to the flying machine on the terrace. Acock opened the fencing of the terrace with a push button and opened the doors of the apparatus. Acock climbed on one side, me on the other side. He closed the glass hood, the other he left open, started the engine, and we were already flying over the city. "Is it far to the seat of the government, and are we flying right there?" "Yes, we are flying right there. In a few moments we will be there." "How far is it to the—" "About 60 kilometers. I did not EMT need to inquire further, because at that moment he pointed out a big, round building and said, "Look, there it is." We were flying slowly. I'd always thought Acock lived in the center of the city, but I was wrong in that. From his place of residence to here, everything seemed to be one city with all the similar streets and houses. But I noticed that we were now in the center, because there were a lot of big buildings here. A cock flew in a semicircle, and we sat down on the roof of the building he'd called a government building. We disembarked. Around us were many such flying machines. Part of the roof was flat, about the size of a football field. Apart from the terraces at the front, almost all buildings had flat roofs. They served only to land such devices, and there were as many as a swarm of bees. I was a little worried because I saw no opportunity to go down from the roof and asked, "Where can we go down?" "Here," he said, "follow me." He pointed to a small platform that I had missed. We went to it. A cock pressed a button and it opened a 2-meter-wide plate. I climbed aboard, A cock followed me, and the elevator took us down to a long, narrow room with a lot of traffic. A cock said, "Here, let us sit down and wait until the hour has come, when I can introduce you to the Son of the Sun and his council." We sat on chairs, many of which were in this room. I had not attracted attention since I arrived at Akkad, but now I was amazed at the way I was viewed here. Some came up to us and talked to A cock. It seemed to me that A cock did not like that. He told them to leave us alone. The way he talked to them, I saw how much he was respected by them. "How many members has this council you spoke of?" Of course, I was very excited. And Acock seemed to be too. I did not know why, although he always gave me an answer when I asked him something. He did not seem to have much conversation. "He has been silent since arriving here, and we sat in that room for a few minutes, always curious to see who was going in and out." Again someone came up to us. This time a young man who had entered through the door ahead. Acock greeted him and exchanged a few friendly words with him. Then he turned to me and said, "We can go in, come with us." We went through the door, through which the young man had stepped in. When I looked into the hall before me, I noticed that the building, we entered a very large hall, one side straight and the other three round, with chairs all around the round walls, and a desk in front of each chair, set up in semicircles in various rows and graded heights, with the rearmost rows about 2 meters above the foremost one. Seating over 500. The straight wall had a 6-meter-long table surrounded by 9 or 10 chairs with high backs. Besides, there were 2 short rows of chairs on the 2 sides at the same height as those of the first row of the semicircle, about 0.5 meter in all lower than the square table. The young man led us to the rows of chairs on the left side of the table, where we sat down. To the left of us began the rows of chairs set up in a semicircle. The counselors entered one after the other and sat down to our left. The chairs were almost all occupied. "Was this meeting only called to discuss my case?" I asked A cock. "Yes, partly." "Why only partially?" "Because there's a meeting every working day, but today the discussion of your case takes precedence." I asked anxiously, "What do they want from me?" "Well, they will ask you some questions."
"Some questions?"
"It will depend on my answers if they will keep me here forever." "I do not think that will be the case, because there are only very few who are too concerned about the inconvenience of your return transport."
"My God.
So there are some who want to prevent my return journey?"
"Yes, there are some."
"Therefore it is good if you answer the questions, then they will convince themselves that there is no danger to us if you are brought back to Earth." I was again full of fear, pale, and thought, "What does it matter to these great gentlemen, whether they keep me here or return to Earth? But if they now decide on the first solution, then I would be lost. I can only hope that they all have such a good heart as A cock." Now a door to our right opened and in came a train of 9 people. Everyone rose, me too, of course. They went to the big table and sat down on the high back chairs. The 5th man on the train, that was probably the Son of the Sun, I thought to myself. When the 9 had taken their seats, the man sitting in the middle gave a sign with his hand, and all those present sat down again. Bothered by my curiosity, I asked, "The Lord in the middle, is that the Son of the Sun?"
"Yes, he is.
He looks like he has a good heart.
I do not think he uses his high position to stifle others. That's the way it is. And I can only add that everyone who holds a high position in our society understands everyone and everything. He was chosen by millions because he is the most understanding. He uses the position he holds to practice justice, as prescribed by our law. Do not you know if he's for or against my return to Earth? If it depended on him alone, you would be back in your home on Earth. At these words, I regained some more courage. Now the Son of the Sun rose and turned to the present in a gentle voice. He probably introduced me to the councilmen who were to advise me on my case. Of course, I could not understand him, but I assumed it from his gestures. There arose a debate among them, which took place without any questions and answers. Acock sat silently at my side. I did not dare ask him what was going on. After about 20 minutes, the Son of the Sun gave a sign and it was quiet in the hall. After a short while, they started to ask Acock and me questions. The Son of the Sun turned to Acock. He stood up and listened to him for several minutes in silence, only occasionally making an affirmative or negative gesture with his head. Acock turned to me and told me to get up. He said, "The Son of the Sun and some counselors want to ask you several questions." I figured Acock would act as an interpreter, but unnecessarily asked him, "How can I answer if I do not understand the questions?" Acock said with a laugh, "Of course with my help, man." I was calmed now and assured him that I would answer all questions. He relayed my answer to the congregation and stopped beside me. One of the counselors now stood up, looking as if he had died a year before and was kept in an ice block all the time. He did not seem to be a dead man. He had put on a triumphant smile. In a thunderous voice, he asks me, "Do you promise to respond truthfully to anything you ask?" Acock translated the question and I answered, "Yes, I give you my word of honor." The next question was, "What is the level of your education?" I was completely surprised by this question, because I had expected other questions, such as, "B. Are you married? How old are you?" or similar. I hesitated a bit with the answer. Acock looked at me, rubbed his hands against each other and waited for my answer. "Finally," I replied, "I went to school for 2 years as a boy, but did not learn much. When I left school, I was still at the first reading book." "Is it certain that you did not later study mechanical engineering or astronomy in another school?" "I never went to such a school and never had the honor of ever speaking to a teacher who taught in these sciences." "What profession do you practice on Earth?" I pointed to Acock and replied, "If you agree, Acock can answer that question for you. He knows all the details." They apparently responded in the affirmative, for Acock spoke for a long time. Surely he told me all he knew about me: my age, my nationality, marital status, profession, etc. Everyone seems to agree. Even the Son of the Sun, who had been silent until now, nodded his head. The one who had asked the first questions sat down, and another rose. He was thin, had a fine face like wax, and asked in a low, pointed voice, "What did you do near our spaceship when you were surprised by our guards?" I said that on that day I had walked a lot and in various places, as I had already told Acock. "What do you Earthlings know about our sunships?" "Obviously little, or actually almost nothing." "What does the word obviously express?" "Obviously," I said, "because my modest working class status does not let me get in contact with learned people, or even scientists, who may already know something more about your spaceships. What I heard now and then was only that we see flying discs. This is what your machines are called on Earth." "The word obvious expresses that I know little or almost nothing about it, where it comes from, or what it consists of. I can guarantee that your ships on Earth are deepest secrets. Since I've seen one up close, I find that the name Flying Pot would be more appropriate." Everyone laughed at this saying. I was happy about it and thought, "It's going well." The second now gave the floor to a third. "What will you do after your return to Earth?" Satisfied with the word "return," I replied, "Well, I will resume my normal life." "No, no, I want to know if you will tell other people that you were on Akkad and what you saw and heard?
Well, frankly, I do not know what to answer.
Why not?
When I'm back on Earth, if you bring me back there, I have to think about whether or not to tell someone.
Of course, there's a chance I'll tell, because we are talkative people on Earth.
What do you mean by talkative?
We cannot keep a secret for a long time.
On the other hand, if I tell my adventure, I would make a fool of myself. Because nobody would believe me, if I told something like that.
So it is possible that I will report about it, but no one will believe me, not even my own family.
So, the word of a man is not valid on Earth?
Possibly, but such an amazing story would have to be proved by evidence.
But from where should I take such evidence?
I would like to know that.
I have this certainty, and I myself would like to ask you something, even if you resent the question. If by chance I tell somebody what I have seen and heard here, and someone would believe everything, what could become of it?
Would evil emerge?
Well, maybe. He did not continue.
The first questioner exclaimed in a thunderous voice,
"Excuse me, but here we ask the questions and not you."
Filled with fear, I said,
"Excuse me, please."
The son of the sun, who had been sitting in silence all the while, now made a sign, and it became quiet, and all sat down again, including Akok and I.
The son of the sun spoke in calm voice to those present.
"Since I understood nothing, I asked Akok, what does he say?"
"He makes a suggestion regarding your case."
"What suggestion?"
"In essence, one should subject you to a full examination before being returned to Earth and not giving you any pieces of evidence that could prove your presence on Akkad. He believes, as you do, that no one on Earth will believe you."
"On Earth, they will not believe your story because you prefer to stumble about in the dark.
What are you trying to say?"
"Well, even if they have good reason to believe your story, they will not want to accept it.
On Earth, you are now taking the first steps in an area where the Akkashians have been at home for many years.
Everyone on Earth wants to be the first to build a bridge from our planet to another planet. Not that we need to go to another planet to live, though there is still enough space on Earth.
Even if our population doubled, the problem of overpopulation would not yet crop up on Earth.
The reason for Earth's people for this project is ambition, honor and glory alone."
As the debate continued without our participation, I went on to say,
"We sometimes feel like in a fairy tale that I know, a hunter once suspected he could capture a large hunting prey, and since no one admired or praised him on his own regular hunts, he decided to make a great hunt so that he would arouse admiration and sensation. He made long preparations, for which he spent much money, but forgot that he would thus drive his children and brothers and sisters into misery, starvation and death, being disadvantaged by his great desire to hunt, and he thought, erroneously, that he was prepared for the great hunt and set out. He soon met a ragged boy who knew about the project and addressed him, 'Lord, do not go into those hunting grounds, because I, once I was there, escaped only by a miracle from the gangs. Where you want to go are already very powerful hunters. Either you will lose your weapons and means of transport on the way, or they will be taken from you if you pass them by.'
The hunter listened to him ungraciously and answered,
'Oh, boy, how can you give advice to a hunter like me?' He thought of the fame that would come to him on his return, and continued on his way. The boy watched him with a sad look. When he had covered about a tenth of the way, he realized that he could not get on with the means of transport at his disposal. He started to buy new ones to either go on or return. At that moment, he was attacked and killed by other better equipped hunters.
Akok smiled and remarked, 'Is that very realistic?'
'Yes, I prefer this way of thinking, while most of my fellow human beings are more or less adventurous.
You do not seem to love your fellow human beings very much?'
Yes, on the contrary, I love everyone, white, black or yellow. What I detest is the action of many people, most of them are materialists.
Akok is an extraordinary man. I admired him more and more for his intelligence. I thought he listened to me exclusively, but no.
He also listened to the debate of the council meeting at the same time our conversation was over. They exchanged their opinions for a few minutes. Then Acock called me up, telling me that the son of the son's suggestion was partly accepted, but I had to answer a few more questions. The son of the son first asked me, "What have you seen and heard here on Akkad?" I realized that question had been asked to test my loyalty, for Acock had certainly told them that. If I became involved in contradictions or concealed anything, I'm sure they would not believe my statements about the earth. I thought for a moment and replied, "My friend Acock can answer in my place, because I have seen everything I saw in his presence, and he has told all that I know to myself. If you consider him your friend, are you not afraid to trouble him with this explanation?" "No, I'm not afraid, because telling the truth does not need to be frightening." This answer seemed to please everyone. "It's good, it was just a rhetorical question," he continued. "If we ever needed anyone on Earth, can we expect cooperation, especially yours? I would like to tell you that I will be eternally grateful to you if you bring me back to Earth, and if any opportunity arises, if one of you needs help, then I would help you even with the help of my life. I believe that this might one day be of great value to us. And when it comes to that, you would do a great service not only to us, but to yourself and to all your loved ones. But how could I help such a great people as the Akkashians? Compared to the body, the eyes are very small, but you could not see them without them." "That's it," I said, though I did not fully understand what he meant by that. I sat down and talked to Acock again. There was another discussion between the counselors and the son of the son. He spoke with great calm, and each one said his opinion. I asked Acock, "What is being talked about right now?" He asks for the advice of the counselors. After the discussion, the son of the son folded his hands on the table and remained silent for a while. The councilmen chatted quietly, then one of them got up and spoke to the son of the son. I almost burst with curiosity and asked Acock, "What is he saying?" Acock smiled contentedly and replied, "What he's saying is good news for you. Can you not translate exactly what he says?" "Yes, in the name of the council, the son of the son has been given authority to treat your case as it pleases him." "And what will he do to me?" "I have already told you how he thinks about you." When the councilman had finished his speech, the son of the son took the floor and said, "Acock translated all this later. What I now declare as my decision, I do so in the name of the council, and therefore in the name of the whole people of Akkad. Since this man did not come here from his own will, but was abducted by one of our own, you can even say with violence and our spirit of goodwill and a high moral attitude, we do not have to prejudice anyone, so we have no other alternative but to bring him back to Earth. Even if we run the risk of bringing down a plan of ours for the earth that has been long in the making." So I explain, "He's seen a lot here on Akkad and he'll stay here for another 2 days. Mr. Acock is ready to allow him continue to stay at his house until the deadline. When that day comes, one of our ships will bring him back to Earth. But if he wants to leave immediately, we will start immediately. However, if he agrees to wait until the deadline I have given, I ask Mr. Acock to accompany him during these 2 days and to show him everything we have. He should also tell him everything about our plan concerning the earth. Then he will realize that it is best for him to keep us as friends." I noticed that even Acock was most astonished at the speech, especially when he heard the last words. Acock translated everything, including the son of the son of the son's request, and asked me to answer that I would return to Earth immediately or wait until the deadline. I answered quickly, "Now that I had the certainty of being brought back to Earth, it did not seem to me for a few days more or less." I answered, "You can say that I will stay here until the deadline." Acock was satisfied with my answer and translated it to the son of the Sunday when he heard this. He told Acock to escort me to his apartment so that we both could have his next meal there with him. He then retired with the 8 people who had sat with him at the table. All the others went away too. 10. A meal with the son of the son. which is the name they use for there. Well, let us call it the planet president. More on that later. Acock and I also left the room. In the corridor, we sat on chairs. He asked me, "Are you satisfied?" "I certainly am satisfied. The son of the sun has invited us to dinner in his residence. Should I eat at the same table with your king or president? How do I get to this great honor? I have already told you several times that there are no class differences with us. We are all the same. So you can have a meal with both the son of the sun and with me or someone else. So you're all like brothers?" I must confess that it was not easy until we all understood this. But since we put that idea into reality, we've reshaped our planet. At first it was a hell of robbery, lies, foolishness, speculation, and atrocities, and now it is a paradise of love, brotherhood, understanding, and progress. Oh, if only it would be the same with us on Earth. Unfortunately, it is not like that. We are governed by the one who considers himself the greatest, and sometimes they snatch everything from each other. Now it will probably be too late for us to found a realm of beauty and lovers on Akkad. Let's go now, the hour of the second meal has almost come. Where are we going? Does not live the son of the sun here in this building? Yes, he has an apartment here. Does not he live in a palace? No. Why should he live in a palace of 80 to 100 rooms, if he is satisfied with 8 or 10? He lives in such an apartment with his wife, two children and two servants. I do not understand how the Akkadians came to such a position. Respecting the son of the sun is logical. And giving the same rights and duties to all, and obeying those who are destined to direct our destiny. When you listen to them, their will becomes law and their word command. But they are not allowed to profit by themselves because of their power. The people are not entrusted to them, so that they profit from their position, because the laws are created for the common good. If they did not take that into account, they would be deprived of the confidence that the people had in voting them. It is, of course, the case that the son of the sun and his counselors have the right and the power to give orders and possibly to revoke them, and they deserve all respect and honor as chosen of our people. In their private lives, however, they have no more rights than anyone else, whether it is their lifestyle or their home. That's just fantastic, I exclaimed. During this conversation we had reached the end of the corridor, where we climbed into an elevator. We went up to the 30th floor and walked down a narrow corridor to a door with a metal lock in the shape of a saucer. Acock turned it with two fingers in a horizontal direction until it was completely merged into the door. It made a faint ringing. We stood in front of the door when I asked, "What do we really want here?" He looked at me in surprise. He did not seem to have expected this question and replied, "Did you forget that we were to eat with the sun's son? An invite to a meal?" "Yes, of course." "Does he live here?" "Yes." "Did you think he lived on the ground floor?" At that moment the door opened and on the threshold appeared a young man with a friendly face. He said in a soft voice, "Please, come in." From his gestures, I could glean the meaning of his words. We stepped in and sat on chairs after he had asked us to. He exchanged a few words with Acock and disappeared. "What did he say?" "He wants to inform the sun's son of our arrival." Acock leaned back in his chair, he seemed tired. I look around. The room was almost a copy of Acock's living room, just a little bigger, the same furniture, the same walls, everything was the same. I remembered the conversation I had had with Acock about the son of the Sunday. I thought he surely lived in the midst of a splendid garden in a palace with a porch facing guards in a white uniform, and a crowd of servants. I thought that he had been elected leader by millions of Akkadians. Everything seemed to me fantastic. I had to change my whole idea. I had imagined everything much bigger and more beautiful here, with all the riches that existed in such buildings on Earth. Nearby, I had imagined an airport with many parked spacecraft, and many that arrived and departed. I had imagined an anteroom with many audience seekers and all the hustle and bustle. Instead, I was here in this modest apartment with no more than two servants. Everywhere was absolute peace. At first I thought that at least in the background there were some larger rooms, but later on I could not find any of them. The room we were in served as a consultation and audience room. I also became aware of why I attracted so much attention. I was so confused that I did not remember wearing my Earth clothes.